Welcome to Bengals Scribe Session, presented by JosephAuto.com and Inquirer Sports. Here, your Bengals beat writers escort you inside the walls of Carl Brown Stadium to hear the news, analysis, and observations unfolding within the team from those documenting it daily. All with the sidecar of snark and absurdity you've come to expect. Let's go. We're about to start a party in here. Please make strums and guitar in here. Looks like we got a good crowd in here. Turn it up to 10 and get lively.
The ball is out. The Bengals have scooped it up. Terrence Newman running back to the 30, 20, 10, 5, touchdown. Up in the air. AJ Green makes the catch.
Oh man!
A deflected ball winds up in the hands of AJ Green as the clock hits zero.
All right, welcome to the latest edition of our Inquirer Sports Bengals podcast. Paul Daner Jr. here with Jim Osarski. Jim, what's up?
Hey, not much.
We're high atop.
Yeah.
High atop the Cincinnati Inquirer building downtown Cincinnati.
We are. Looking down on you all.
Yeah, we are. Literally and figuratively.
except for them dudes on the bridge.
Are they still there?
No.
I got to say.
They're not there.
I'm a little disappointed. We had the final open OTA practice. We're recording this Tuesday night afterwards. And we had was it Bring Your Daughter to the Bridge Day? I looked like it could have been a daughter. We were far enough away that I couldn't quite tell the nature of their relationship.
Right. But they were together.
They were clearly together.
What I thought was
a little
great.
Lunch date.
Yeah. What I thought was great was the, because, you know, man spreading's a thing. People going to jail for man spreading now, you know, where it seems like men just kind of like sit and start to like take over everything around them.
Is this a thing?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You're not aware of the man spreading? Google it.
And is this an epidemic?
Well, it is.
I've heard of.
See,
like,
we're men.
I know.
So,
I know that you can't. I know there's issues with spreading. I guess man spreading on the subways in New York. I heard about that.
It happens on airplanes.
Right.
Bar stools.
Thankfully, it's not happened to me much on airplanes.
You might be a perpetrator.
I'm not. I am very, very aware because I have very long legs. So I'm always very try to be courteous of where they're going because I understand
where
that
they're going.
Because I understand that it can be very obtrusive to people that are sitting next to me on an airplane because my legs are so
long.
So don't accuse me of manspreading. It's a bad way to start here.
Okay,
you're starting with negativity.
But where I was going with that was after the pair. We don't know. You know, father daughter, man girlfriend. Husband, wife, I don't know. But the two guys who came later, they could not have been further apart. It was just like, we're both here. We both want to watch this, but we can't be too close together.
No, we're not here together.
It was actually kind of funny. That's why I bring up the man spreading. Like maybe we needed just some room on the giant bridge.
Yes.
Between each other.
It's like when you go to see a movie that's just not quite as popular. It's late in its run. No one's in the theater. You come with a buddy.
Right.
I mean,
how many seats do you give each other?
How many seats go between? Now, here's my if you have a fully open row and there's no other circumstances surrounding where you sit, minimum one seat. I would say I would be more comfortable with two seats.
Well, if you're going with your friend, then you must not like that person very much. Because then how are you going to talk during
if it's
previews?
An empty theater? Okay. If it's an empty theater, you're right. One seat is probably the standard, but you definitely cannot sit next to
me. No.
You cannot sit next to me in that circumstance.
No.
It's one of these new luxury movie theaters with all recliner type deals.
Right.
Which is a terrible idea for someone like me who constantly falls asleep during movies. You're just guaranteeing I will fall asleep in your movie theater.
Yeah. No, you're right. I think in the luxury recliner theater, you can't give the gap, I think, because they're just such big seats and I'm sure it'd be frowned upon, but in a traditional movie theater, I think you gotta give yourself the one seat gap.
Must.
If you have the option.
Yeah. I mean, now if there's other people around or maybe someone's in front of you in the row in front of you and you're trying to make sure that whatever. It's fine to sit next to your buddy. That's not the issue. But if you have superfluous space, if you will,
right?
You need you. That's a must rule, yeah, in my book, yeah, as far as I'm concerned.
But these two out on the bridge over OTAs, they gave themselves like there was so much space that it was noticeable.
Yeah,
I guess I was like, wow, you really, yeah.
Maybe they weren't with each other.
Well, but see, you're united. Well, see, I would have thought, if you're going to come out on the bridge, as we've talked about now the last couple of podcasts, you're going to come out, you're going to make the effort to come out and stand on the bridge, yeah, to watch OTAs, you're obviously a fan. So why not hook up with this dude and be like, hey, you know, who day and whatever, you got to yell at each other to, yeah, like signify your fandom.
Yeah.
And not, and like, and
not stand,
I don't know, to me,
talk.
I guess if I was, you know, I'm trying to think of it. I'm trying to, you know, there's nothing that brings people together like sports.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you will hug anyone next to you if your team wins the game or throws a touchdown or you know, hits the home run. And it's just, to me, it was just fascinating that, like, okay, OTAs brought you together on the bridge.
Why
stand 100 feet apart? I don't know.
No, it was strange to me. You want to know why? You know I love the bridge people. Bridge people are my people, right? But you didn't get to the point where you're watching OTAs on a bridge because you have impeccable social skills.
Okay, that's fair.
I just feel like it's something that maybe they're working through.
Maybe.
You know, and you're putting them on blast. You're giving them a hard time. Should we talk about what happened under the bridge and not what happened on the bridge?
Yeah, we should.
All right. Sorry.
I'm not sorry. I will derail this every week.
Yeah, that's a quality. At least it was only a 5-minute derail, yeah. So it wasn't too bad. So let me give you a little rundown of what we're going to get to on today's podcast. Because as we mentioned last week, this is actually will be the last of our normal podcasts until we get closer to training camp.
Right.
Next week, we won't be able to do the podcast for a number of reasons. One of which is I'm getting married, and we have mini camp will happen, but all the regular coverage will occur. We just won't have the podcast next week, in its standard place. After that will be the run of a special podcast series that I've been working hard on putting together. Like, I just want to tell you all, I want to just spill the beans right now. I just want, because I'm getting more and more excited by the day, the more interviews I do on this topic and the more people we end up talking to and delving deeper into this subject, because I'm super pumped about it. I cannot do that. But tell your friends that there's something very exciting in the very, very near future. So we'll have a run of those, and that'll get us all the way to closer to training camp. And so at that point, then, we'll be back with our ones. We're just missing next week. So for that reason, we're going to break down last week to the offensive depth chart rough draft. We're going to get in the back half of this show to the defensive depth chart rough draft. And since we just finished the open OTA sessions, we're going to give you some takeaways, some positives, some negatives. I'll be mostly positive because I'm a positive guy. Jim will be negative because he's a negative, yeah, northerner. it's all that negativity and that comes from the Milwaukee area.
Yeah.
They're actually a pretty happy bunch up there, I got to say.
Yeah.
Every time I've been to Milwaukee, I'm always like, man, these people are – they appreciate – the good things in life, like brats and beer.
I was just about to say, it's a lot of the brats. Although, you know, they're getting cranky because while people here may knock me on social media because I'm trying to say it's like summertime, but I just went back for some social events over the weekend, and it's like 55 degrees, and then the wind was blowing, so it felt more like 48. So when you come here and it's 85, it's like summer.
It is.
They're getting a little cranky.
Would you like to get into debate about when summer officially starts?
No.
No?
No.
It get very in-depth.
No.
Well, the summer solstice is almost upon us, so you'll really get the full taste of summer. You wait. You wait till August, training camp, dog days, man.
Yeah.
It can get pretty brutal out there when we're baking out there every day. I feel for those players when they go through training camp because it is, and I mean it's worse many other places, obviously, but it's no joke here. So let's get into OTAs. where we're at. Let's do some positives and some negatives. What do you got? What's stuck out to you? Let's start positive.
Let's start positive.
Positive guy first.
The first thing was the backup quarterback in AJ McCarron, and I'll just say it that definitively. You know, we're only allowed to see one session per week of these OTAs, but AJ McCarron received nearly all.
Yeah,
I'll say it. Nearly all of the backup quarterback reps.
We weren't tracking them, but if I was tracking percentage of reps, ballparking off what I think we saw, I would say Dalton 40, McCarron 40. No, maybe more than that. 45, 45,
yeah.
10.
Yeah,
would be my sure. would be what I would say on what it was. So McCarron with 45% and Pryor with 10%, yeah. And those were like handoffs.
And you know, listeners of the podcast will know we talked about McCarron and his health and maybe his that this may happen with him being healthy this year, you know, as opposed to last year. You know, he said his mechanics had been tightened up, less stress on the shoulder, the elbow. We've seen it, and you know, he does look healthy, does look good, knows the offense, and to me I think that's a positive, because you want to know who your backup quarterback is. We don't know if he can play in the NFL, but at least right now we know he's healthy, and that the team and the coaches clearly feel, you know, either A, he's earned the reps, or B, he deserves to have them, so they know, you know, what they have going into training camp.
Because let's be honest about this. If by this point, I mean, you're talking for them, these 3 weeks, three OTAs, you're looking at practice OTA number 9 or 8 or 9, I guess, that we've seen here. And they've seen him throw. I mean, they've done workouts on the field. They get enough reports to know where he's at. If they really felt like they had not seen what they wanted to see, they would be giving a little more run to Terrell Pryor.
Right.
They would know by now that, okay, let's get Pryor a little more involved this last week of OTA.
Right.
I mean, maybe they will more at minicamp if they don't have not been seen. But it gives the feeling that they have been liking what they've seen. Wallace Gilberry talked about it, I think, last week, about really being impressed with what he's seen out of McCarron. Right. And you know, I think that he's done what they want him to do. Now, stop, listener, because I know what you're saying. You're looking around at your buddy or whoever you're listening to this with, and you're saying, oh, my God, maybe he'll take over Dalton.
Yeah.
Maybe by midseason, maybe if Dalton struggles, McCarron. No, stop. It's not like that. It is not like that yet. I mean, we don't know anything about this guy.
No, yet. It's strictly that – and. That's sort of why I prefaced it the way I did, and that it's a positive to see a healthy quarterback and a guy who obviously the team, you know, felt strong enough and to keep him around after that all of his health issues last year. But, yeah, no, we're not getting to that point yet. But it's definitely a positive in the regard of just him being able to participate.
Yeah.
And the coach is feeling strong enough about him to give him that many reps.
Yeah. I mean, they've got to give him a chance. I mean, he'll much more be defined by how he plays in the preseason. But, you know, as far as things go thus far, very positive reviews from McCarron, and everybody there is obviously liking what they're seeing. I think a positive for me is the versatility that we're seeing. And this was something that Hugh and all the coaches all have been preaching. Paul Gunther talked about it, and we've referenced this a number of times here, about how one of his biggest regrets last year was the fact that he didn't feel like he had the backups ready enough and all that type of stuff. You want to – this is the time of year to test things, see how guys react in certain places. We'll think about what we've seen, just a few of the things that we've seen, okay? We've seen Rex Burkhead spending more time working with the receivers. We saw a red zone series – on this last Tuesday where Leon Hall showed up at safety for
right.
a few snaps. That was a surprise because that's something that I've asked about before, and it was met with, oh, I'm sure he could, but we're not interested in doing that. But I think as they think about, okay, what do we really have at safety? We have Reggie Nelson and George Iloka, and we think Sean Williams might be good, and we have Deron Smith and Shiloh Keough. You got to start thinking, what if your starters go down? I mean, that's a very real possibility.
Right.
Leon Hall needs to be a guy who's taking some snaps there because he could, and you have enough depth at your corner position, at least have some familiarity. So I thought that was a maybe – it may be a minor thing. We may never talk about it again. It may never creep up again. But an interesting thing to put away in the back of your head that he could help out there. We saw Jake, not Eric Fisher.
Yes.
I don't know why the Kansas City Chiefs Eric Fisher pick from last year is just so ingrained in my head.
Yeah.
But I continually accidentally let it slip out as Eric. But Jake Fisher, we saw him turn into – you know, A.J. Green or something. I mean, I don't know who we thought he was, but they ran a couple of plays for him at that move tight end position where he went out, and he looked good. He had a spin move at the end of one. I mean, he looked smooth catching passes. I mean, you can throw to that guy.
Yeah. You know what's funny is he's the same size, height-wise, as C.J. Uzomah, Tyler Kroft. He's only an inch taller than Tyler Eifert.
Yeah.
Now he's 30 pounds heavier than all of them, but, you know. So it was, and that 30 pounds makes a difference because you mentioned this before. Reggie Nelson is back there, and he even couldn't help himself. He's like, huge man running at me, which is funny because it's like, wow, that 30 pounds makes a difference because even Reggie was like, whoa, wait a minute.
Yeah, I'm not interested in this. But, you know, I mean, that's a position where we saw in the playoff game for New England last year,
right,
where they had the play, the tackle eligible type play. The Bengals utilized so much of that move tight end position last year, trying to have the six offensive linemen as a part of their power packages. And so if you can have somebody that can come in there and be, you know, Marshall Newhouse did a lot of that in the past. It was always the Dennis Rowland drinking game, which was anytime Dennis Rowland was tackle eligible, take a drink, and you'd always have 10 or so of those a game. You know, I think Fisher for the time being from what we saw, a nice fit in that role. Talking to TJ Houshmandzadeh, a story that we'll get into later, who he's here as part of the Minority Fellowship program for the next 2 weeks, when was just randomly asked about what he thought about this group of Bengals, and he said the difference is they're going to be good for a long time forward because look at some of the guys they're drafted. And out of nowhere, he just said, did you see number 74 out there catching passes? He made it look easy. I mean, he just started going off on how impressive that was.
Right.
And, you know, it is. It's another thing that guys can do, but we've seen that kind of versatility kind of across this roster. We've seen a lot of guys trying out in different spots. So that's one thing. That's positive.
Yeah.
Yay on positive there. Do you wanna go negative or you wanna give me another positive?
You wanna
turn angry? Yeah. Get bitter.
I don't know if it's angry, but it's a segue off of your positive there, mentioning Leon Hall at the safety position. I would say if there was one negative for me, it was the fact that one of your starting safeties, George Iloka, missed these OTAs, or most of them, with an injury, which we don't quite know yet, but everyone seems to think he'll be back for camp. And then Marcus Hunt missed OTAs with a back injury. He talked to us on this last open media session, kind of a flare-up that he experienced in April during workouts, and sounded like a weightlifting session gone awry. And, you know, look, it's OTAs, and guys don't have to be there. But, you know, when you see other injured players, and I'll just say like a Sean Porter or Avantes Perfect or Cedric Oboihe, who are coming off major injuries, who you know are not going to be ready in the present, but they're there working out, you know, kind of getting their rehab in. And then these other guys, like a Hunt, like a Iloka, you're told will be ready, but Marcus is just kind of walking around.
Yeah, street
George,
clothes.
We didn't really see at all.
George
other than
in the locker room.
And that's it.
Yeah.
So, again, you know, we can only go with what they say. However, you know, if there's going to be a negative, and again, this is really splitting hairs, especially in an OTA you know, there was no, you didn't suffer a season-ending injury. You're just sort of wondering about some guys. I would say that would be it for me. Is like, you know, I don't want to call it glaring, but like, yeah, a standout. You know, guys you notice that aren't there, I guess.
Yeah, we went into a whole Marcus Hunt diatribe tangent last week, so I won't go too deep. But I do want to bring in some audio of you and a couple of reporters talking to Marcus Hunt from this past Tuesday, because this is the first time we've talked to him, had a chance to talk to him about the injury and sort of what's been going on with him this offseason. So here's a little bit of Marcus Hunt from the Tuesday of the final week of OTAs.
This is a back injury, that little annoying, disturbing back injury. So unfortunately, it's keeping me out of being out there working out. So, I mean, it was a pre-existing condition already, but we kept it under control. You know, throughout my senior year, especially, that's when I heard it actually the first time. And you know, through the draft and combine process, everything, you know, it was completely fine. And you know, past 2 years, it was completely fine. You know, because we did the right stuff in the weight room, and you know, it was all manageable. So, but when we came back, I just, you know, was lifting with the guys and doing stuff that I haven't been doing in so long. And I just kind of came out again. So, you know, it's just.
You had to have surgery?
No. It's just it takes a while to get it back into a manageable
spot.
Yeah.
Training camp is still fine.
Yeah, I should be up for training camp. You know, it's we're going day by day. You know, I'm trying to be back as soon as possible and trying to do stuff as soon as possible. So, you know, training camp is definitely. And the mix, just the win and the training camp, that's kind of
okay. So you said that they noticed in April when you first got back in April? Was it?
No, I re-injured it again when we first got back.
In April?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it was just a bad decision on my part to start doing stuff that I haven't done in so long. You know, it's just you're in that kind of, you know, you're on a rush with the guys and you want to compete and, you know, everybody's, you know, in the zone, and it's just, you know, one slight bad move and, you know. Yeah, it's really frustrating, but, you know, it's definitely a better option for the long run than it is right now.
What have you been able to get done this offseason, going into April? I know I talked to Paul earlier in the year, and he was saying that you want to make sure that this was a year, especially you, and really kind of got that extra off-field guidance, so to speak. So what have you been able to get done? And are you still kind of looking at the game a little bit differently?
Yeah, I've been, you know, ever since we finished the season, I've been trying to critique myself, you know, what I did and what I did wrong, and what I can definitely improve on, and you know, the kind of areas, and just been working out and kind of trying to get my body right, and but eventually it let me down.
Because you've had it under control in the past, is it? I know it's frustrating now, but are you hopeful, I guess, that what you're doing, like, okay, let me just do these things and then we'll be good?
Yeah, I mean, I first injured it my senior year, in the summer of my senior year, and then I actually blew it out the very first game when we played against Baylor, I mean, on the third play. So I missed the next week, but we were able to kind of get it under control, so I was able to play against Texas A&M, and, you know, it's been good ever since. But now it got kind of to the next level of the injury itself, so it's a little more severe right now. But
is it a pain thing for you? Is it like a muscle where it's kind of like, well, I feel good, and then so you got to test it out, or is it?
Yeah, it's just a muscle thing itself, because you know the weight I carry is in itself, and you know, it's just the back sometimes gets overlooked. And that's when, you know, the injuries occur.
So that was really the first time that we got closer to specifics on what happened, finding out that it's a back thing. Of course, he had the right ankle injury that kept him out of the majority of last year, but he's had back issues in the past. So certainly something to keep an eye on from the Estonian. I want to say if there's a negative for me, and it's something that I'm writing about this week, and I don't know that it's a huge revelation, but I think it's more of a reality when you see it out there, is that this tight end group has to have some people wondering what's going to happen, because yeah. Tyler Eifert is your veteran in the house, by the way, with 16 or 17 regular season games played. There's your vet. And you've got a bunch of kids.
Yeah.
And you've got some raw kids that don't really know much. I had a long conversation with CJ Uzama, who is just as personable as they come.
Yeah.
A really, really, really personable kid, who was so smitten with the fact that he was plastered on the front of our newspaper. I don't know if you saw this, but it was on the Tuesday morning edition. Our fine photographer, Kareem Elgazar, had gone out to the Ronald McDonald
yeah.
fundraiser function. I'm surprised you weren't there, Charity Circuit Gym. I don't know why you weren't there.
Yeah. That one missed.
That one flew under the radar.
Yeah, that one flew under the radar a little
bit. But Kareem was out there and popping some photos, and so ended up getting this really good one of this little girl at a fish tank with CJ and Jake Kumerow, I believe, behind her. And her mother reacting happily in the background, which is a great shot. And so they ended up running it on the front of the paper. So I'm sitting there talking to Tyler Croft in the locker room for my tight end story, and I see him come in with our paper, holding it up like with the biggest smile on his face. Look at this! Did you see this? You know, showing. He thought it was just the coolest thing ever. But anyway, such a nice guy. But I was talking with him a little bit later about his transition and what's been going on, and he said, you know what's been the hardest thing is I'd never been in a three-point stance and had to come out of that and go into a route before. Like, just hadn't.
Yeah, and you know, Tyler Croft's the other one. They actually had to restart an individual drill because he kind of almost fell over.
Yeah.
He was in a three-point, had to get up and out, and it kind of was like, okay, stop. We need to do this again.
Yeah.
And it was sort of a reminder of like, yeah, these guys –
And we've seen a couple of times, and this is to be expected from any rookies, but we've seen times where two guys go in motion, and it's one of these rookie tight end types, and we've just seen some things like that. And if they are raw, they're young. And what should be pointed out is, and when talking to tight ends coach John Hayes about this, because I said, this has to be as young of a room as you've had. And he said, well, yeah, not – You know, because in the past, they had ingrained starters. He said, yeah, not only just in recent years, but go all the way back. They had Reggie Kelly here since 2003, who was an ingrained veteran starter and you know, a great presence. And then fast forward that till Jermaine Gresham and Tyler Eifert, you know, coming in. They've had these guys. It's been set. They've always seemed to have some depth there. Or at least veterans there. Now it's Tyler Eifert and a bunch of kids. I mean, you just can't have a younger, more raw room, and they're depending on it. You know, it just makes you wonder how much can you really depend on a two tight end set? Or maybe they should have a little more Jake Fisher. Maybe they should have them switch numbers. I think we joked maybe at some point you're going to have Jake Fisher wearing 87,
right?
And Uzama wearing 74 or something. But I mean. It's something that there should be some concern about is how quick can these guys learn? Cause they're really raw.
Right. And you know, who knows that. And again, Hugh Jackson told us on that last OTA session, you know, he's about, finding who can do what and putting the best 11 out there. And this sort of goes back to your point earlier about versatility. Hey, if you know, they're starting five on the line of set and Jake Fisher is the best option in blocking situations, which he clearly would be over one of these rookie tight ends. You know, they need to find out if he can, you know, as Andrew Whitworth said, if he can catch a pass, you know, you don't want to necessarily just sort of give it away that as soon as 74 comes in, it's tackle eligible. Oh, this is a run play.
Right. Absolutely.
You know, so.
And they've used, and they so successfully have used that six offensive right. line set. I mean, by their unfortunate circumstance in the playoff game,
right.
I mean, they were just lining up in it almost all the time because they had no right. real options that the other than just to try to bully him up and down the field. But, you know, Hugh Jackson is not afraid to do that if he feels like that's the best way. And like he's talked to all of us about, it's right now he's trying to figure out what his pieces are and exactly how they can fit. And that means seeing what everybody looks like. And a lot of that right now is, as he called it, basketball on grass.
Grass, yeah.
You know, you don't you take it for what it is. You're
right.
Guys aren't winning and losing jobs out here. They're playing to kind of...
It's an opportunity for an opportunity,
For an opportunity, technically for another opportunity.
Yes.
So, you got to have an opportunity for an opportunity. But it's still things to be worked out there. It would be probably my number one position of concern going into the season would be tight end, personally. Let's move on. Let's happy it up a little bit.
Okay.
This is a little dark.
Yeah.
You know, Bengals fans are about to go join the bridge people and jump off. You know, they're really sad about the tight ends and the injuries. let's brighten it up. You got another positive?
Wow. You know, we've talked a little bit about Jake Fisher. I honestly, this rookie class wasn't, you know, they were drafted, and it's like, okay, these guys draft and develop. And Jake Fisher's a guy who we had a first-round grade on, at least that's what the coaches told us. We're going to move him around along. I don't know. I'm really impressed at the fact how quickly he's taken to multiple positions. We were told he can do it.
But he is doing
it.
Yeah. Every single position except center on the line, and that includes tight end.
And even, you know, the veterans are given their respect too. Like, hey, the kid's learning. He's doing the right things. He's picking up things very quickly. So to me, that's a positive because, again, you know, in all of our post-draft stuff, it was like, oh, these guys aren't going to be ready to play. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, Jake Fisher's is – to me, been a positive.
Yeah, I would concur. Yeah. I mean, you can't tell much in OTAs when there's barely any contact
right,
as far
the line,
as how
right.
effective he actually will be, but you have tape on that.
Right.
But it's all about retention and things like that, and he seems to be a good fit in that regard. I'd be with you. I think Jake Fisher is a positive, and they're going to need him to be. You know, I mean, I think he'd be the first one off the bench if something happened to Andre Smith or Andrew Whitworth. You know, all respect to Eric Winston. I think, assuming he plays well in preseason as they expect him to, I think Fisher would probably be that first guy. For me, I also think, and this was an exclamation point was sort of put on that Tuesday, is Darquez Dennard continues to play really well at the cornerback position yeah. and impress. You know, he had two interceptions on Tuesday. One was kind of a gift that he ran down a deep pass that was overthrown, but another one was
you had to make the catch, though.
You had to make the catch, and he's had some pass breakups and had one on a shorter pass. But, you know, credit him, man. He's making plays. He's right there. He looks like one of the top corners. He looks like he could be a starter. That's a huge positive. I want to bring in a couple of things. First of all, let me bring in some audio of the conversation with Darquez that occurred on Tuesday. He talks a little bit about some of his picks and just kind of a little bit about his OTAs in general. So here's a little bit of a conversation with Darquez Dennard.
Two picks today. You got to feel good even though it's practice.
Two picks is good anywhere. You know, it's a hard lead. It's very hard lead, especially you got the quarterbacks that can spin it and, you know, you got the receivers that can catch it. And, you know, two hard plays today and I made them. And, you know, it's felt good to get those and, you know, just boost my confidence and going into the season.
I was talking to Dre. You wanted to
finish
the ball.
I seen Leon's the Leon that I know that I grew up watching. He's explosive. You can tell he's in out of his brace. He's comfortable with himself, making a lot of plays. He made a lot of plays his OTAs, and he's just having fun. Leon that I grew up watching.
I think it was even Zimmer in Minnesota. Texted somebody and said, "Hey, this guy's a Connor. Can you see somebody? Can you see somebody similar?"
Can't say that yet. I mean, Leon's been playing 9 years at a high level, all-pro player, big contracts. I haven't reached that, so that's high, acclaim to even put in a boat with Leon. So I haven't made it that yet. Hopefully, I can. And I'm a competitive person. I want to be, that and more. But that's big shoes to fill. So, but I'm looking forward to it. And, I'm honored to learn from him and watch him every day.
You mentioned wanting to, a goal for this year is to increase the playmaking ability. So going back to today, again, it's Hugh Jackson's it's basketball on grass, but to be able to make plays, I guess, in these scenarios, like interceptions, things like that. Is it a confidence builder? Is it just one of those things where it's like, this is what I want to do in the future, so let's do it now?
It's both. It's both. It's definitely a confidence builder. Once you go out there and make plays, and you start getting comfortable, and that allows you to play faster. That allows you to have more confidence in whatever you do, and it gives you trust to whatever you believe in, what you see, to actually just do it and off reaction, because you've been doing it for a long time. And once you just continue to do it, and the more consistent you can be, there's more plays you can be, and they'll lead to playmaking.
So, first round pick, blood in the water, quote, right. I just can't get enough of that.
Yeah.
I mean, pretty much I'm going to have – anytime I mention him, I have to mention blood in the water every single time. But that's because it defines his mentality this year. Is enough of this, easing my way in, sitting the bench stuff. I don't care who's here. It's time to get after it.
So yeah. He's
proven it.
Right. Exactly. Again – We've talked about this many times with the number of first round picks in the room, but he looks down, a couple lockers over, and there's Dre Kirkpatrick, and a lot of us think Dre's in line for a huge kind of breakout season, and I don't know. Darquez looks at me, I don't want to wait that long,
right? And who knows? I mean, in the same regard that last year. I sat with a microphone in my hand and can say that if you went back, you would hear me say a lot of negative things about Dre Kirkpatrick this time last year. People thought that he was kind of fading his way to a bust, and now we're talking about his number one corner. We could be, by the end of next year, talking about Darquez Denard as number one corner.
Right.
I mean, there's no reason why not. The guy was a first-round draft pick who has, by all accounts, looked good in practice. Why couldn't he start playing and be great? I think it's real a possibility. What I want to do here is I want to bring another interview, because this is going to transition out of one and into the other, because we're just so damn smooth like that. Okay, so I have Leon Hall talking about both Darquez Denard and the next topic I'm going to want to get into, which is the arrival of TJ Houshmandzadeh. So I've got Leon Hall on both these topics. How good are we here?
That's amazing.
Seriously, this is next level stuff, people. So just go ahead and enjoy this. This is Leon Hall on those two topics. I wanted to ask you about Darquez real quick. Mm-hmm. Two picks today?
Yeah, man. He's out there balling.
Are you seeing – is it noticeable to you, the difference, even just from last year? The difference, or –
You know what, last year, I don't know if there's that big of a difference, because last year when he came here, he played rough.
Yeah.
When he first got here, he was one of those guys that stood out in the OTAs, and, in the workouts and stuff like that. He's one of those guys that, early on, he made made a point of it, I'm sure, to just, yeah. I mean, he just played well. He played pretty well. Yeah. Just kind of kept it going. Same thing with, this OTAs. Yesterday, maybe he didn't have two picks, but, I mean, technique-wise, as far as point of attack being where he's supposed to be, I mean, that was another good day. So,
yeah,
it's not surprising.
Yeah.
Honestly, it's really not.
What's your best memory of TJ from back when?
Of TJ?
Yeah, I mean, you guys probably – he probably was trying to get in your face a little bit in the beginning.
We had some good battles, especially him on the inside. One thing I always remember, I forget who I was telling yesterday when – when I saw him, but I just remember his craftiness, if that's a word. Craftiness? Yeah, craft?
That's a word.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's real, he's a crafty guy. And I caught him a couple of times yesterday talking to some of the receivers about how he would have did this kind of route. Mm-hmm. But that's just kind of, was a big part of his game. I mean, he wasn't, a guy that's going to run the 4.3s. I mean, I don't know how quick he was, but on the field he's real quick. He's smart. He knew what you were supposed to be doing as a defender. Leverages and all that kind of stuff. He understood that, and he was able to break it down. So, I learned a lot from him just going against him without him even saying much.
Yeah.
He was just a smart player.
Those teams had plenty of people talking. Did he ever get it?
Oh, he was talking too. Yeah. He might not have been like the guy that you would think. I guess if you've been here, he's a talker.
Yeah.
But, obviously being in the same team as Chad, I think he kind of got a lot of the noise, if you will. But, TJ was one of those guys. He had all the confidence in the world. Mm-hmm. You ask him about anything, he was the best at it. one of those guys. But he's just a fun guy to talk to.
Yeah.
Because he knows a lot, and he has a lot of confidence. And he definitely does his fair share of talking when he's out there.
Does the locker room need a little bit of that?
I don't know if there's a recipe to have the perfect locker room. And I don't know what kind of locker rooms cross over to make you a great football team. Because we've had a few different locker rooms in here. And I've felt great a lot at the locker room. And, some have been good out there, some have not. So, honestly, I don't know what kind of guys you may need in the locker room. I think we have a good group of guys here. Mm-hmm. Now, are we missing a guy in the locker room? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what the recipe is, but, it's hard to say. Hopefully we got the good one.
All right, so there's Leon Hall with our smooth audio transition. But talking about TJ Houshmandzadeh, who is here on the NFL Coaching Fellowship Program for 2 weeks. But he was here from 01 to 08 and set all kinds of – still holds the record for most receptions in a season. He had 112 in 2007, was just a beast here. Only four guys remain, though, from that team from 08. So, there's a lot of guys that can learn from him and the type of player he is. And how many times have we heard this offseason from Hugh Jackson? They need more guys with fire and competitiveness and grit and the lineup from the guy next to you and say, I'm going to whoop your behind. That is the type of guys they want. That's the type of attitude that he wants more of. And I think that's what they think is maybe the difference between this team making it to the playoffs and not winning there. And he was sort of the epitome of that back when he played. So if they can bring in a guy even for a couple of weeks to try to get that attitude and show a little bit of that, then, hey, more power to you. It doesn't hurt anything.
No, A.J. Green, of all people, said that it is different hearing certain things from a guy who not only played the game, but played the game at a very high level and just recently. If your best receiver isn't afraid to come out and say, I can hear what that man is saying and apply it or appreciate it, then... And whatever that may be, that's got to be a positive.
Yeah, and TJ very open about how different the culture is here. Just in being here a day, it's like night and day, and it is. It is. Back then, it was a sort of a wild, be your own person, not a whole lot of control, a lot of craziness going on. And now it's almost the exact opposite of that. And obviously Hugh just feels like they need the pendulum needs to swing a little bit back the other direction. Cause that's good. You want to feel like there's more freedom and a little bit of craziness out there keeping everybody. And I think that's why they thought Vontaze Burfict was such a good fit. Cause he brought a lot of that. That guy might be a little crazy. He might have a little bit of crazy in him that I don't think you want to see. And that's good for business in this league. So if they can get some of that out of him, how much difference is this really going to make? I don't know that it really makes
it's a nice story, though.
It's a very nice story. And at this time of year, Jim, you know what we need? We desperately need a nice story. It's that time of year, especially this offseason. This has been one of the most boring off seasons for an NFL franchise, certainly for the Bengals, in a long time. There's just been nothing. There's no giant storyline. We're not. I mean, even the injuries we're following are
right.
Blah. There's not a whole lot.
I won't bring up the team in the Northeast because they've had a very interesting offseason. But
as
usually, this goes back to what we've talked about over several podcasts. Is this is the result of? I know Bengals fans get frustrated with this, but when your team is consistently in the playoffs, this is what happens.
Off-seasons are boring.
Off-seasons are boring.
Scribes suffer is what happens.
And, you know, it's a byproduct of, you know, of that success. And I understand.
Yeah, but sometimes, you know.
That's where the camp stuff comes in.
But successful teams can still have storyline. I mean, successful teams could have injuries they're following or major first-round picks or competitions at certain spots. But you're right.
I guess I'm
there's less of that. There's less of that because more things are more set. Things are more stable. There's not a whole lot of, well, they don't have any receivers or they don't have any line. Who's going to – what rookie is going to be the starter? You know, I mean, there's not a whole lot of that. But it's just been kind of boring.
Well, think about it. If you're on a national level – so, again, we'll take away the defending champs because that's, you know, the NFC champs, you've got, what, a contract situation that isn't really one because the quarterback's locked up there. You're talking about the team the Bengals lost to. You're not hearing tons of stuff coming. I mean, Indianapolis, some old guy free agent signings, you know. But, I mean, again, you're talking about some individual blips here, right?
Right.
So, it's not like this craziness of an offseason. I don't know. I just think it's, you know, the result of guys being relatively healthy, contract situations not being too crazy, and, you know, a team that expects to go to the playoffs. They'd rather have that discussion than, you know, what's happening in June or July.
And that's understandable. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean,
ex-players coming back in, nice stories, and, you know, can add a little perspective.
Yeah. So anyway, that's a good run of positives and negatives where we're at here. I think we've properly summed it up.
Yeah.
Good job, Jim.
Hey.
That was really good by us. We were smooth.
We're keeping it on the treadmill.
We are. We're just chopping wood.
Yeah.
That's all we're doing. Let's go defensive depth chart chatter.
Sure.
And wrap this baby up. So sort of went into last week a little bit into the defensive line situation when we were talking about Margus Hunt. So I just want to kind of go through where they're at there. It's probably a little more crowded. It's pretty crowded on the defensive line. You've got, I mean, I think your starters are pretty much set with Mike Johnson, Geno Atkins, Domata, Pecco, and Carlos Dunlap. I'd even throw Brandon Thompson in there as sort of a quasi-starter in a rotation with Domata. I think that's going to happen. I've heard too many coaches talk about Brandon Thompson, how they want more out of him. They think they can get more out of him.
Right.
They probably should have more out of him. And, you know, as much as they love talking up Domata, Pecco, and by the way, have you felt the Domata Pecco backlash rage from Bengals fans yet?
No.
Yeah. They're frustrated. They don't like him. They just don't like him. Because, and you know why? Because Pro Football Focus hates him. And I'm not saying they personally hate him. He's gotten a lot of bad ratings there. And so people see that, say, well, then he must stink. And he is getting older.
Yeah.
He is not anywhere near as disruptive as he used to be. And meanwhile, Brandon Thompson, every time he's in there, seems to be making a play. It's probably time for that rotation. I know Bengals fans are clamoring for that, even though the coaches are a little more hesitant. So I'd put them in there. Then you get to Margus Hunt, Will Clark, Pat Sims. I haven't mentioned Marcus Hardison yet.
Right.
We're at 10. And, you know, and then you never know.
Devin Still.
Yeah, Devin Still, of course, is there at 11. I mean, you know.
Right.
He's
not
got,
every,
he's
not,
got
a, not all of these guys you just mentioned will be on this team.
They can't. I mean, I don't see any way they'd keep 10.
That's a lot of D-linemen.
That's a lot of defensive linemen. I don't think they've I have to think back to my roster outlooks last year. I don't think Marvin has ever kept 10 defensive linemen.
Especially with the instability at linebacker with Perfect.
And he likes keeping extra linebackers. Right. Talked a lot about that last year. He said that there's a need for extra linebackers because special teams and the way the league's changing and stuff like that. So, you know, if you're Devin still, it's just a tough climb for you. Unless injuries occur. And you could argue if injuries wouldn't have occurred last year, he would have spent most time in the practice squad. So the story hasn't really necessarily changed.
Right.
He needs it to. He needs to be healthy, go-ahead guy. You know, obviously all thoughts and prayers are with him and Leah. But as far as on the football field, he needs that health to translate if he's going to find a way to
make it. I mean, when you look at just the facts, I mean, he was – They deemed that he wasn't one of their best options at the outset. And
they kept Christo Bielucchetti.
Right. You know, and Marcus Hardison, again, fourth-round draft pick. You know, that guy isn't going anywhere.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he may not be on the rotation of five that you mentioned to start, but
– And Gilberry's in that. Right. Well, Gilberry's in that six.
Right. So now we're to seven.
Right, right.
When you count the draft pick. So, you know, competition is really tight there. And you know, again, that's what you want with your big guys, you know, to see who's going to kind of step up and maybe take a job.
Pat Sims might not make this team. And they brought him back thinking he was going to be some sort of – and he may be. I mean, we don't really know. You had a really great story talking with Pat Sims that ran last Sunday. Talking with all these guys, there are a number of guys on these 1 year veteran minimum basic deals, and it's just a different perspective. When you've been around the league and you've been cut and you've been through it and you're on a 1 year vet minimum deal and you know how expendable you are, it's just a different outlook to things.
Right, yeah. And I don't think it's a coincidence that a lot of those guys are on the defensive side of the ball. Because look, you know, it's all about youth and talent, and I get all that, but when you've got a guy who's got an NFL resume and he's hungry and he's playing for his career, he's playing, and whether it be in Cincinnati or putting stuff on film for, you know, to land somewhere else, you know, should cuts happen or whatever, there's a hunger there. There's a little bit of a fire. You mentioned the fire from Hugh Jackson. Now these guys aren't necessarily, you know, crazy, wild, you know, mean guys, but it's there's that urgency.
Yeah.
You know.
Do you have that Pat Sims audio?
No.
You don't. You're a disappointment.
I am.
You're a disappointment. I was thinking that we could play that Pat Sims audio for our fans here.
You know,
podcast that stuck around all the way to this far in. We could have rewarded them with your unbelievably insightful interview with Pat Sims.
But I'm going to blame you because I don't think it translates to your equipment. It's on a different recorder that I have.
Oh, yeah. You mean my equipment that is, you know, made in the aughts? How old is that recorder? It's not a new one. I mean, the only thing that all it's missing is the tape, is the giant tape that has the microphone attachment.
It is the backup recorder for a reason, and it was needed that day.
And you know who suffers? The fans.
Yeah.
Our fans.
You know what? They'll just
our
have to go,
readers and
they'll
listeners.
They'll just have to go to Cincinnati.com and read the story.
The story is really good. And honestly, the majority of the quotes, I think, are actually already in it. So you're good to go there. You talked to Pat, Shiloh,
and Brandon,
Brandon G. Yeah, there's lots of good stuff in there from them. So let's move on here to linebackers.
This is an interesting spot.
It's a really, really interesting spot. So just going off sort of last year, I mean, you say keep seven. They're not afraid to keep a lot of linebackers. We learned that last year. But so for me, I have this top seven here right now. I mean, seven's a big number for linebackers. You know, I think in most years Marvin had kept six, but I mean that seven probably seems like a possibility. Perfect is a PUP candidate, so that could be an extra roster spot.
Right.
But if he's on the roster, let's count him now. Perfect, Maluga, Emmanuel Lemieux, A.J. Hawk, Vinny Ray, Marquise Flowers, who they love, P.J. Dawson, who's a draft pick who ain't going anywhere, and you've got seven. And now you start – I mean, you start getting into a lot of other guys that are still hanging around wondering right. about what about me. You know, poor Sean Porter.
Right.
Who just can't – I roots – I'm officially, like, the leader of the Sean Porter fan club. I actually have not talked to him a ton. I feel like every time I talk to him, something bad happens to him.
Right.
So I'm trying to keep my distance. but it's really mainly any time anybody talks to him, something bad happens to him just because he's had so many injury issues. I just root for a guy to just to have one healthy season and be able to play just to show right. that he can. And what he can do, because just no one knows what he is, except he was a fourth-round draft pick who's been hurt over and over and over and over again and has one NFL play in which he tore his ACL.
Right.
So
Nico Johnson.
Nico Johnson, Chris Carter. You know, you've got a lot of guys in that mix there that are hanging in, wondering if there's a chance for them. Right. You know, UFAs that are going to try to make a play. You know, that's a pretty crowded room. They could keep six with Perfect on PUP, or they could keep seven and maybe keep a guy like Porter or Nico or right. whoever, with Perfect on the PUP.
Right. The Perfect, decision, we'll call it that. If he can play, he's going to play. I guess the difference is there. Is it week four he's ready versus, that PUP designation and waiting a little longer? I think they'll err on the side of caution.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if he's not ready to go by, say, like week two, then they'll probably maybe I'll hear about it. They don't like me projecting their health. But even a veteran like Ray Maluga, he had that hamstring issue. He's been, out there in OTAs, but he's been working on the side a little bit. So, he says, again, kind of like George Iloka and Marcus Hunt, hey, I'll be ready for training camp. But, if there's some veteran health issues here, they may have to go a little deeper, especially as you said, Paul, these are core special teams guys as well. Mm-hmm. So that's, I think, for people to remember, we're like, why don't they just keep more D linemen? There's more talent there. You could say that, but, some of those big boys aren't really going to be running down on coverage or setting a block. So, the linebacker spot is really interesting in that regard. I think they're going to hope, rookie Paul P.J. Dawson really kind of flashes here in camp and, some of these other guys outside of that top seven that you mentioned.
Yeah.
But I think that is a good seven to start with.
Yeah. But you just never know, and they obviously got caught last year having issues there. They've clearly solidified it, but then it brings up some other questions, and injuries can happen and play themselves out and change dynamics of everything. But just to mention it, I've heard a lot of good talk about Marquise Flowers, who's going to be going into his second year. They really like what he's becoming. I think they expect him to be a bigger part of this defense this year, so keep an eye out for that as well. Let's get into the DBs and wrap this. So the DBs, I've got my five corners, four safeties. I think it's a pretty safe bet how this typically will fall. Adam Jones, Drake Kirkpatrick, Leon Hall, Darquez Dennard, Josh Shaw.
Yep.
barring some craziness, or an injury.
Yeah.
I don't see anything but those five being it. I would be shocked if Brandon G or Chris Lewis Harris or any of these guys ended up unseating. I just don't see that. And then you get into safety and you start talking about kind of similar to what we were talking about earlier. You talk about you got George Iloka and Reggie Nelson and Sean Williams and Deron Smith and, maybe one of these. We've seen good things from some of these undrafted free agents.
Floyd Raven Sr.
He
was held out of. We didn't get a chance to see him in the rookie minicamp. They held him out for an undisclosed injury, precautionary reasons. And him and Deron Smith paired together a little bit in this last OTA session. But they do, you know, Mark Carrier was a fan of his. They went brought him in here for without a reason.
Yeah.
They liked his flash plays at A&M, and they liked the fact that he was not only a flash player defensively, but also on special teams. You know, the guy kind of a nose for the ball on some block kicks, things like that. So, again, you know, when you're talking about the back end of rosters, special teams, Darren Simmons has a lot to do with it, is almost as much as some of the position coaches and what those guys can do.
Yeah, as far as who's going to be those last two to three guys on the right. roster, it's Marvin Lewis and Darren Simmons hashing right. that out about who's best for special teams. And yeah, I, you know, Florida Ravens senior, that's a really interesting one. And I've been really impressed on what I've seen of him. Just he seems to be in the right spot. He's made some nice plays. He's been right on coverages when they've right. tried to connect. And he's had some pass breakups. I think he's looked pretty good as far as you can tell. I mean, I certainly think he's given him an opportunity for an opportunity
right.
for an opportunity.
Yeah.
So that's it. And then we'll go ahead and throw the specialist depth chart in there.
Sure.
Mike Nugent, Kevin Huber, Clark Harris. Okay, we're done with that.
Yeah.
So there we go. You are now officially prepped and ready for the regular season. You know your depth chart. Now you know it, and you're ready to go.
Send all complaints at Paul Danner Jr.
Yep, that's it. When your guy gets cut, and you are told,
opposite, "Hey, you know what?
That's my bad."
If you know, my first podcast ever here, you saddled me with Tyler Eifert injury news.
Yeah,
so I'm gonna hang way too early roster depth chart prognostications on you.
Me. That's fine. That's fine. I'll take that. You know what? People need to know this stuff.
They do.
This is where it stands right now. Okay. In our eyes.
Yeah.
You know? And that's all the only eyes that really matter.
Yeah.
We
that and the bridge people.
They know better than us. They have better angles than us.
They do.
It's
like the all 22s, man.
It is. We don't even have access. Those people have we should get them on here to tell us about what they saw.
Yeah.
And ask about the nature of their relationship. So let's wrap this up. So this is gonna be the last. This is gonna be the last podcast that you and I do here for a little while.
Yeah.
So, do you have any requests? Because I'm still gonna be around doing podcasts, but they're gonna be of a different variety. So
right.
I'll let you pick what you want to take us out with tonight. If you have anything in particular that you're now, we have Bunbury last weekend, and I did my stupid Bengals Bunbury connection post. So if Bengals were Bunbury acts, who they would be? And I have to point out, I'm pretty proud of this, which I liked a lot of the ones I came up with. I felt like I had good reasoning for all of them, but the best one was you can't tell me Pac-Man Jones and Snoop Dogg are not basically like the same. Okay. Snoop Dogg used to be a much different dude, right?
Right.
I mean, now there's a reality show about how good of a father he is.
Right.
Okay. I mean, this is Snoop Dogg. This is Chronics and Guns. And,
right.
And Murder Was the Case. Yeah.
Well, that was Snoop Doggy Dogg.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, this is Snoop Dogg.
So it is
right.
different. Oh, but to your point, it's different.
He's now Adam Jones now.
There you go.
He's not Pac-Man anymore. He's Adam Jones. They've both changed their names. They both basically invented language. Some phrases.
Right.
For shizzle, make it rain. Both of those were entered into the lexicon by these guys.
Yeah.
And now they've both, I think, they've kind of almost both risen above to be even better than they ever have been in this new age of their life. Boom. Adam Jones and Snoop Dogg, same guy. And what happened on Adam's Instagram page? He's backstage hanging out with Snoop Dogg on
right.
Sunday night. Absolutely. So I think it proved me true.
Yeah,
and that's about the most. I mean, that's as predictable as it gets. That
yeah.
Adam's hanging out with Snoop. they're wild personalities.
Well, I for some reason, you know, when you ask, oh, what should we go out on? Especially because, you know, you last podcast for a while, at least in of this version.
Yeah.
For some reason, Whitney Houston's "Didn't We Almost Have It All" came to mind. I don't know. This is my first run of podcast with you starting here. And I just felt like, you know what? We almost had it all.
We did.
We almost did. We almost had a podcast name.
We did.
We almost got the bridge people to come out.
Yeah.
We almost got
all the way through minicamp.
Yeah. You know,
we almost. You're right.
I like it. It was the first thing that came to mind.
That's kind of a concern, but it's okay. I like it though. I like that. That's the first thing that came into your mind was a little Whitney Houston, because you gotta respect her, you know. R.I.P. So let's wrap it up. Like I mentioned, no podcast next week, but after that, the special podcast series that I so want to tell you about, but I can't. But don't worry, you'll know very, very soon, and it's gonna be freaking awesome. That's all I can tell you. So look out for that. We have all that coming to you. And until then, Whitney Houston. Didn't we almost have it all? The nights we held on till the morning. You know you'll never love that way again. Didn't we? So fine, we kept our hearts together down the line, a moment in the soul.